there's a historian I really like, and he's like, a lot of the stories are similar, but the cast and the costumes are different. The common variable across all the best presentations I've seen is understanding where you are in the movie. This is particularly true in generative, right? It could disrupt whole categories of businesses. I'm going to pull a wild card here. Let me flip it on you. So imagine, you know, you're on a Shark Tank panel. What would you like to see?
I'm Rachel Coble. And I'm Liz Dean. Welcome to Mock It. This podcast interviews industry experts from AI innovators to UX architects to nonprofit leaders and lots of people in between.
We explore the back of the napkin ideas that impact the nation, so you don't have to dig for the discoveries yourself. Enjoy and don't forget to like and subscribe.
This week on Mock It, we have someone who is incredibly cool, way smarter than I will ever be.
And different type of smart.
Yeah, okay, different type of smart. And just has a lot of niche knowledge about deep tech and startup companies.
So I'd say we have Ryan Lewis, who is a partner with SRI Ventures. In this role, Ryan invests in early stage companies across sectors and structures, spin outs by leveraging intellectual property and expertise from SRI's R&D labs.
See, you're just reading that. Like, that just proves my point that he's smart.
Ryan also happens to be an advisory board member at MetroStar, among many other places. He's a board member, but you'll have to listen to learn more.
Yeah, very impressive resume. And if you have ever wanted to pitch a startup, this is the episode for you.
I find that rule with myself and work a lot of times. Like, I was meeting with a founder recently and I was like, explain it to me like I'm five. Nope, three. Yeah. Okay, can you draw a picture? Still don't get it. All right, check.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what we need. So,
all right, we won't model out any equations. Okay, all right, that's fine.
Just don't judge us too hard.
Also, you have a very cool background. Like we were, this is, yeah. Like, you're very cool.
It's deep. You have an impressive career. I mean, so you are a software engineer first, right?
Yeah, although not by training.
You just like fell into software engineer somehow?
Like a lot of people that like tech, right? Sort of learned to self-program when I was in high school. And then in grad school, the program I was focused on was econometrics. And so you're forced like economic math. Like we're going to do like projection of like risk in like the bond market or something like that. You have to build all these mathematical models for it, and you are forced, or you're not forced, but you're compelled to learn another programming language, which is R. And so by the very nature of like having to work with different data sets, you have to be somewhat proficient because there's no one that can like really help you, like especially around. They were like, all right, you get 25 minutes on the supercomputer at the school and that's all you get. And I'm like, well, what if I get it wrong? They're like, well, you get it another in 2 weeks. I'm like, well, I guess I better get this right. Right.
I cannot do that stress.
And so like now, obviously schools would not have that issue anymore. But like when we were all in school, like that was still kind of a thing. So I became forced to kind of learn. So out of school, I became pretty early on as like a tech consultant or just an on-site engineer. Not necessarily by training, but just by the fact of life.
I mean, it kind of sounds like you trained a bit.
Yeah. Every now and again, I feel compelled to like jump into like some financial discussion. And then my wife will be like, no one cares. It's boring. And I'm not even certain you know what you're talking about. And I'm like, all true topics. So you are correct. Thank you for that. So no, it's, I fell into it a little bit by interest, a little bit by happenstance, but I think we can get into this in the show, but I think what's true, particularly one of the things that has driven MetroStar's growth so much is that given how quick technologies move, much faster, right, than even when I was in school, it's very hard, I think, to find people that are proficient or at least aspire to be proficient. And so companies like this, where they are on the leading edge and investing in people to learn, right? Especially with a lot of the episodes in the past, you guys have talked about AIML.
Yep.
A lot of stuff didn't exist. Like, I mean, like classical machine learning existed like from mathematical training, but there was no... Like I never touched any Python libraries until 2015. And wow. So for someone to say, I've been doing this for 45 years, it's like, well, No, you haven't. Right? Because that doesn't make sense. So when people say things like that, I'm like, I don't get it. And so, no, I fell into it, but it's something I've tried to stick with over
time. It's crazy how fast it's all changing and adapting. Like if you told me when I started this job in 2020 that I'd be using ChatGPT like every day for various parts of my job, I would have been like, what's ChatGPT?
What's in-text browser search? Yeah. I'm like, what does that mean?
I remember the first time I had to even Google what a large language model was, because in a meeting I was in, someone kept saying LLM and I was like Googling on the side.
Probably some investor that's babbling about it.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're all playing Mad Libs. LM.
Yes.
Generative. Cloud. It's like,
we were just talking about that.
We're not even saying sentences. We're just saying words.
It's insane. Do you ever, especially in the world that you're in your career now, where you are kind of investing in a lot of these companies, when you're in the meetings with people, do you ever get overwhelmed or frustrated with all the acronyms or all the like
words
that people are just like saying that don't really mean anything?
That's a good question. I would say, let me try to think diplomatically. No, perhaps not frustrated, but it is a very good skill. And I think certainly not one that I have honed, but I am attempting to do so, right? Where you try to level set what people are talking about, because particularly in any tech cycle, but like one that we're in now, it's so easy to get caught up in the excitement and think of like a pitch. Imagine you two are pitching a startup and to me, we can go through 30 minutes of just excitement and thrill and high level problem discussion and not actually really get to the core of like, what are you trying to do? What's the next steps for this company? What are your goals? How can I help? Where are your edge? Like you could easily burn 30 minutes and not touch any of it.
Yeah.
So a lot of like, certainly what, not just me, but a lot of investors try to do is at least try to level set and put a framework around what is an individual or set of individuals talking about in the context of blank, right? We don't need to spend 30 minutes talking about how AI is going to change the world or something like that.
That's a really good skill to have, to be able to wade through.
I can't say I can do it, but I aspire to do so.
So I have a very general question. So we're talking about AI and ML. Can you give us a brief overview of what deep tech is? Because I know that you're very involved in that. You invested in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of these terms get battered around a lot. So I think actually defining it's important, because sometimes they can have slightly different meanings, which then kind of drive you down different paths. But like certainly on the deep tech side, I think the common at least definition or thought that we use around it when we're defining tech companies or technologies in that category are really advanced research that is indicative around or dependent upon other technologies, right, to deliver an impact to a customer, right? So if you think about, compare where you're seeing right now, we're just talking about AI ML models, whether they're classical machine learning or now generative, compare that with like just a SaaS company, like DoorDash, something where you are using it, you want to order food, you get it. It's different when you look and say, here's an AI ML company that may integrate into DoorDash app, where it can optimize ordering or prioritization or something like that. It's dependent upon these other technologies or infrastructure to execute a mission, right? And so like take an example closer to home here at MetroStar, think like what Onyx does, right? It's certainly a platform. It has a model suite within it. But it's also, its real value is when it is inserted into an analyst workflow or whatever the use case may be. And so you're not just bringing an app to a market, you're bringing disruption to a whole technical workflow. And so why that's important is I think why so many entrepreneurs and investors and just, you know, market analysts in general get excited about the deep tech category is that you're no longer looking at companies that maybe offer like a point disruption, but essentially, and this is particularly true in generative, right? It could disrupt whole categories of businesses, right? So suddenly we hear, and you know, you read in the news a lot about search getting disrupted, but you could copy and paste that with really any sort of potential business model, right? Where, you know, I was at an event this morning and they were talking about, here's how, right, legal fields, right, could be completely disrupted. So essentially the value of a deep tech company from an entrepreneur and investor perspective is that it can fundamentally change, right? Whole categories or redefine them.
Very cool.
Wow. which makes it challenging though, because as companies that are trying to build into that sort of overall sector, right? You now have different dependencies, right? And I think of early days, like this is when I was at InQtel and we had just started the OpenAI lab that we were working on. This was the old version, the last boom of AI, which dates me completely. But this was right when the convolutional net boom was occurring. It kind of launched after really in late 2012 into 2013 with the open sourcing of AlexNet, which was a computer vision model that won the ImageNet competition, which was kind of became the de facto standard for almost a whole decade before now we're in the generative boom. But like take all the excitement around those models when we were first open sourcing some of our own at the lab, it was contingent that there was an inference pipeline, meaning there was some software to run the model. It was contingent on that there was some UI, some human being that knew how to use the UI to get the benefit of what, let's say it was computer vision and it was detecting things in this room, that they had some value to extract from it. And one of the things we quickly learned then was that while an amazing area to focus on, deep tech, it's contingent upon other things happening simultaneously. And so I think what a lot of investors do in enterprise IT companies, the government, is that they try to take or are trying to take a holistic approach. So when, let's say I meet you, you're developing a really cool large language model or LLM, and I'm going to look at you and say, cool, like I need something to run this in.
Yeah.
I need to know how you're going to interface with my other stuff. I want to know, right, what the long-term benefits could be with how my analysts use it. So there's a lot of different variables, which increase sometimes the complexity of evaluating the risk versus reward for early stage companies.
Oh, that, I feel like you just have to think of so many ifs, buts, and
very much so.
That's so risk and reward. What would you say? Like, so the dot-com bubble burst, like everyone freaking out about Y2K when the internet was first becoming more accessible to people. What is kind of the equivalent of that right now, risk wise, with like AI? Like, what are people most worried about?
I think like there's maybe two perspectives, right? And maybe one I'll be a little more provocative.
Yeah, do it.
But like the first, I think, is, you know, what we hear a lot about. This was, I think, clearly one of the big drivers for the executive order that came out last week around AI, and we can dig into that. But there's certainly a lot of concern about, as I think the common vernacular is sort of centered around, which is things going off the rails.
Yeah.
I think sometimes that terminology is tricky because everyone kind of envisions their own worst version of this as opposed to saying, here's what the actual risks are. Right. But I think whatever that is, whether it's biased or whether it's inaccuracy, whether it is deliberate poisoning or meaning deliberate changes in the model, whether that be just by accident in poor design or through malicious insertion from a third party, whatever it is. Right. Those are, as kind of going back to what we're talking about deep tech, as you insert new technologies into existing applications or workflows, right, you now, like anything else in life, you're spreading the chain of dependencies, right? We were talking about kids before the show started, right? Well, what happens when one of your kids sick, right? Well, then everything changes in the house. How many times have, you know, I've been texting, I'm like, okay, are you getting the kid? I'll get him. Okay, you do this. Like it has this domino effect. That's true when you're talking about highly integrated technical systems as well, right? So I think the concern that a lot of discussion has dug deep into post executive order release is, what are all the sort of variables that we should be concerned about? And I think the risk that's maybe underlying a lot of that, which I think is very appropriate, is how do we even know, right? Like, how do we know, right, that we're hitting the right performance thresholds? How do we know if we're starting to butt up against red lines that we don't want to see happen with performance, whatever that concern variable may be? And that is something that remains early days. We're still very much in the first inning, so to speak, of that type of risk assessment. And so I think a lot of the whether startups or enterprise IT companies or government are all kind of focusing on that. That's certainly risk number one. I think the on the investor side, right, I think one of the things that, you know, certainly not just me, but others think about is as excitement builds in any sort of category, right, are we making the most capital efficient decisions when we think about investing in certain subsectors? So take, for example, all of the kind of big press releases you see with generative AI companies, right? You'll say, well, a lot of that's going to build foundational models. That is a worthy effort, and it's certainly, you know, garnered all of our attention in the last 9 months. But what are the 11 months? But what are the other technologies that perhaps we are missing, which enable this sort of better adoption at the enterprise level, right? So kind of going back to the core definition of deep tech, if its true value is contingent upon integrating in your application or your application, and I'm missing some of those key connectivity points, whether they be very hard or just basic engineering, right? You don't want to miss that and over-index on certain categories. So I think that's something that maybe I'm not, doesn't keep me up at night, perhaps, because perhaps I never sleep with children, but it does have concern, which is, you know, are we maybe over-indexing on certain parts of the tech stack and less on others? Because I think for a lot of customers, putting on my, you know, operator days, right, and this was most recently at AWS, a lot of times, right, it's not about, you know, can I get the best model performance to the nine nines, right, of a confidence score or whatever the evaluation metric is. A lot of it may be, it's good enough for this, but it's cost efficient here. So you start having these inherent trade-offs mm-hmm. that happen with any customer. And I think this is particularly true in the government. So concern one is certainly, do we fully understand how whatever we're deploying at, in mass is performing and functioning? Do we even know? Okay to say if we don't. And then two is, as we look to build out the next capabilities, are we balancing, right, our investments? Think whether you're an investor or internal R&D or the government, are we spending our time wisely? Because given how much things are moving so quickly, there's a high level of opportunity cost to burning time or burning capital on a category that may not be that critical.
I have a quick question. This is really interesting. I'm like nerding out right now. what about the court of public opinion? Especially with risk number one, we brought up some biases that can be built in. And then like, I'm thinking, you know, ChatGPT or any AI model. I mean, depending upon who built it at point one might have a certain bias. And then when it's interjected into these other technologies, that gets carried over. How are you balancing these risks as an investor and as a user with public opinion? Because there's a lot of distrust with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And this is true, you know, just in mass, right? Public opinion is true with any customer. Think of any of, like, for example, MetroStar's government customers, right, where they're going to start using something. It's going to hit some threshold. Other people adopt it. It's one of those things where it's almost a complete binary test, where all it takes is one mistake for someone to go, wait a minute, like, I'm not touching this. Now, we can argue whether or not that's a fair assessment or not, but it's a true one. And this was true before generative. But I think to your broader point, any system, right, that gets deployed. So just imagine the three of us were deploying something. And we were saying, yeah, we're deploying, we have our app, and we're our model and our app, we're deploying it. Well, there should be, and I think a lot of startups are talking about this well. I think there's some work in the government that's articulated these points well also, which is even just evaluating sort of the approach to building, deploying, verifying, and continuously monitoring models, whether it be classic, from classical machine learning all the way to generative. I don't want to say that that's like a known truth as well as anything else, but you're starting to see a lot more general understanding around best practices for that. And I think of like a lot of classic examples where just with bias, where if I only show, right, a model, like certain types of data,
yeah,
right, it's just, you're immediately tilting it, whether you mean to or not, right? And it means that those models can be brittle, particularly in the generative category, thinking through how end users are going to prompt it, right?
Yeah. Like
that's something where...
And they want to catch you doing... I saw this one article. It was like a whole team of people were like trying to get ChatGPT to say something that was like wrong.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, it doesn't take a ton of creativity when you're like, no. What's weird? What, like, just read a little bit on Reddit and you're like, what are weird people going to ask on the internet? Yeah. And like, and just know, like, that's what's going to happen. And I think for different companies, whether public or private sector, I think what this current wave of tech innovation has led to is more discussions around what is the goal of the particular application, right? You may, to your broader point with the public, a public facing app that is servicing maybe core information. So think of like, imagine if like the IRS was servicing, like, here's an interface, ask tax questions or things like that. Awesome. Yeah. Like anything to make that process better. Right. Right, that has a big blast radius, right?
Yeah.
That if things are wrong or malicious or spoofed, right, it can cause a lot of problems very quickly, right? So thinking about like what the application or the set of models are servicing and then trying to build out your procedural safeguards around that, it's critical. I think from an investing perspective, that's certainly like for certain companies that are either building models or building platforms, whatever the case may be, right, these are helping or talking with the founders through what their thinking is, how they approach it, are they even thinking about these things? Those are signals in and of itself to know how much you are interested in working with those companies or not.
Yeah.
The second part then is also looking through what different technologies can we build, right, to offer or invest in to offer a more comprehensive solution. So no one is good at everything. So what if we're investing in a really cool platform that runs these types of models? Do they have some sort of audibility function into it? All right. If we're investing in, right, a UI interface, right, can we have some sort of like flagging or low code, no code detection that allows users to report or tune things, right? So the system remains as frictionless as possible, but dynamic enough, right, where it can start flagging and addressing these issues without saying, everyone stop, we're going to go back to write the paper, right? So that's kind of the delicate balancing act. And I think, you know, certainly a lot of people have said this, it's not just me, is that, you know, we're still kind of in early days. So I think what, from a public opinion perspective, it wouldn't surprise me if you see occasional stories come out where there's stuff that... to use the term, went off the rails, right? Like, because a lot of this, in my own experience, and I'm certainly not the most experienced at all in this area, but so much of this is learning through doing. Like, I remember early days when we were trying to figure out what's the efficacy of like certain like computer vision models, and someone like, well, how do you evaluate it? And you're like, I know what it says in research docs, but I don't really know until I run my own test, right? Yeah. And so I think that doesn't excuse, you know, completely errant behavior, but I think you're going to see a lot of companies, right, try to dynamically learn as they go. And I think you're going to see the same behavior, or we already are seeing the same behavior in certain government agencies as well.
Oh, that's like scary, or not scary. It's just, I feel like in the 90s or early 2000s, when you were starting a startup, you had those errors of being able to make misjudgments. Now everything is on such a larger scale, and the internet and social media and all of that. It's like your mistakes are really rewarded on.
Everyone's homework gets checked publicly these days.
Yeah.
But the benefit is, you know, because like almost all tech, right, it has no state of its own, right? It's neither good nor bad, right? So the part that is cool about it is that as tech becomes, you know, increasingly diffuse. Like I think of, you know, early in my days, like it took like a lot of like, you know, specialized training, right, to learn a particular software system. I'm going to date myself here. But like, I remember like learning like some, like SAP ERP systems. And I was just like, am I completely clueless or this is hard to learn? And like, fast forward to like, I remember the first time, like I will, you know, we all have like our little life changing moments that we remember. And I remember the first time I really started working with open source software. This was the Cloudera repo. And I was just like, oh my God, like I get this. Right. And so much of that friction that, you know, existed, access to information or getting the right training, like suddenly, like there were so many resources that were just there. Right. And that trend has only accelerated. And so to your point, yeah, there's a lot higher exposure rate of error, but the benefit is that there's also a lot more information. So like when startups are launching, or you have really established companies like MetroStar and they're launching a whole new product line, very rarely is anyone starting from zero anymore, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot that you can kind of bake into your first product idea or just this general concept even before you launch a product. Whereas a couple of years ago or, you know, 2 decades ago, you wouldn't have that. So, yeah. You know, there's more risk, but there's also a lot more resources that allow people to get started faster.
When you're meeting people and they're trying to get investments, you know, that like old graphic of like your confidence and how much you know, and then you learn more and then your confidence goes down, yeah. That graphic.
Mine's just flat at the bottom. For sure. Yeah. I know the chart.
It's like you feel really confident and then you learn more and you're actually getting better, but then you're getting like way less confident. Yep. When you're talking to people, like how confident do you want them to be? Or do you want them to be a little bit like,
great question.
That is a really good question.
Do you want them to be like a little bit like work, but there's like a lot of things I need to factor in.
Well, I'm going to pull a wild card here. Let me flip it on you. So imagine, you know, you're on a Shark Tank panel. What would you like to see?
A good person.
I roll up to you and I'm like, I'm launching, you know, Ryan Inc. And I'm fairly certain it will work in this circumstance. But if it does, it'll be high impact. What do you think? Are you like, is this guy, what's this guy about? Or you're like,
I would feel like I would do a gut check. I feel like that's like not the right, you know, the very.
I was going to say the same thing, but I think that's just who we are.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. I was like, that's not a technical answer.
But I don't know. I don't really like you. So yeah.
So we're just going to, it's not you. It's me. No, it is you.
I think having a little bit, not being, I think arrogance you. Really throws me off.
Yes. If so I can't I think trust they, you, yeah. that's, I think that's.
So I think someone who's still willing to ask questions would be a plus for me.
Okay. So we're all on the same page because I'm very similar, right? Like so much of like what we do, right? Anytime you're on the edge of anything, right? In this case, you know, we're talking about like what we do in tech, but there's this inherent balancing act where you have, on the one hand, you have to have, whatever you want to call it, confidence or arrogance or just utter belief that you can change things, right? Yeah. That you can change a category for the better, whatever that is. Because if you don't, if like the three of us get together and we're like, well, that's probably not going to work. It's like, well,
there's a balance.
Like, what are we doing here then? You want to do that. This company was started under the premise, right? I was re-listening to Ollie's episode recently, and it was started with like, we can have an impact,
yes,
right?
The three C's, curious, confident, creative.
But spoken like a marketing team member at MetroStar.
Yeah. Check it. Good marketing here. But on the other hand, right, particularly in all the things we've just been talking about today, I think one of the biggest things, right, that I certainly look for is that given what we just, literally what we were just mentioning, right, that, you know, we are not the first travelers in this category, that many have come before us. I think one of the things that is maybe not a complete showstopper, but a huge gating function for us is if you were presenting to me again in our example, right? I would want to know, like, have you done like your research? Like, where do you fit into the category? Like, what are maybe not things that you don't think will work? Cause that's a negative statement, but what are the things, right? As you look out in your product, what are the things that you don't know? Right. Because especially the earlier stage of the company, but you're not going to know the answer. And to say that you do is kind of ridiculous. That's like saying where are we all going to be sitting a year from now? I don't know. Here, hopefully, but like, you don't know. Right. And to say that you do, you're kind of like, or whatever, like some people may like that. I think particularly in the deep tech categories though, I like to see people that have really thought through the sector and, you know, have their kind of area where they think I can crush it. And then have their areas where you're like, I don't know, but I want to go here. Because without that, it says, you know, your idea may be good. It may not be, but you're perhaps unbounded on where you're really going to have an impact.
So I have a question for you. You are very, you know, wealth of knowledge, and you also are on a broad advisor and on a lot of different boards and stuff like that. How would you say that experience has helped you feel confident as an investor going into a room and really, like, you know, feeling confident in yourself to ask these questions, or if someone answered them, you're like, ooh, flag. Yeah.
Red flags with Liz.
Yeah. So I think one of the things, I'm going to steal a line from someone else, one of my old bosses is, you know, he used to say, or still says, that, you know, venture is very much a pattern recognition business. And so we can call that, you know, wisdom, or you can call it intelligence, whatever you want to say, but it doesn't guarantee an answer, but at least starts telling you kind of where there may be risk or major opportunities, right? Both in the positive and negative. And that's, I think, one of the biggest things, right, that has certainly borne true for myself, right? It's perhaps not the growth of wisdom. I don't think I can make that claim. but I think what I have observed in my own experience is you start to see certain trends in companies. And that is true maybe at a technical sector specific or stage specific, or early versus later stage companies, or domain specific, whether it's servicing public sector, you know, public sector, national security, classified environment, vice, private sector, open, direct to consumer. So you start kind of seeing these different dynamics. And I think where it is, where hopefully an investor can be very impactful with the company is a founder or set of founders, right? Just like the founders here, I mean, laser like focused, right, on execution, almost to the point where it becomes like, we like to joke, it's like almost like a religious belief where it's like, I believe
it. Religion.
Yeah. I want that. We can talk about that at a next show. But like that zeal is something you want to harness, because it's almost impossible to make that zeal just exist with your wish. It has this sort of classic lightning in a bottle, but how to bound it, right? As you have founders, like, for example, Ali was talking about, I wanted to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. There's a time when that can be really cool when you're learning and trying to figure out the product. There can also be a time when that can be very risky, right? When you're trying to maybe scale up at enterprise, offerings, going back to your point on what features should we include? What features should we not? We can only pick a certain number before we exhaust capital, right? So seeing those sorts of trends and watching how different founders and other investors respond, I would say that that's certainly been probably the biggest net benefit for myself is just learning from a lot of others. So, and kind of go back to your question on confidence, right? It does boost, maybe not to, I think it's fair to say, it does boost your confidence a little bit, because you can't say I've seen this movie before, because every movie's different, except certain movies. Like,
but the tropes are the same.
Yeah.
So like, Christmas movies.
As a lot of the, I like, there's one historian I really like, and he's like, a lot of the stories are similar, but the cast and the costumes are different. Right. And like so, to borrow his phrase, I think that's true here. So you can start building your own sort of playbook. And I think the thing that's coolest, and maybe this is me just getting older, is early in my career, and I don't know how both of you were, but I found a lot of my opinions to be very unbounded. Like if you were to ask me, like, what do you think about blank? I'd be like, well, it's cool. And you're like, what does that mean? And as you watch a lot of these companies and learn from these other founders or other investors, you start realizing, oh, this is kind of how I view the world, whether it's right or it's wrong. You start understanding kind of the prism in which you operate. And maybe this is not a revelation.
Your frontal cortex closes at 25 and you're like, oh, I have opinions now.
But being aware, like being self-aware of it, like, and again, maybe this is something other people do naturally or are very predisposed to it. I found that it has taken, it maybe the easiest way to say, it didn't happen naturally for me, is to really look back and say, you know, why do I think X or Y? And now having a lot of these other experiences to kind of start thinking about my framework. You're talking about how do you evaluate companies in one of the previous questions. You're inherently running them through the framework you build in your own mind at a period of time.
So if you have like an intern on your team, is that the first thing you would teach them is how to start forming their own opinions?
Man, you're on fire with your questions today.
just throwing 100 on the mound.
It's that journalism background coming in clutch.
Certainly for like interns, and this is true for both technical and for business leaders. And you know, we had a lot during my time at Amazon was it's just exposure. Right. And this was more true because it was a technical role that I was in, but for like really aspiring, they're mainly data scientists or ML engineers, but a lot of times they were much like myself when I was younger. And so maybe my own bias coming through here, but I was very unbounded. I was like, I just want to know things. And in early days, high level of exposure is great because you just start realizing,
I want to do that. I don't want to do that.
Into what I like. And I think of one employee, she was awesome. Like graduated out of undergrad early, a real rock star, but just kind of like all over the place. And I was like, one of the best things for someone like that, at least in my opinion, was let's just get you some rolling exposure, you know, have you experienced a bunch of different things. And then we come back, right? 3 to 6 months or, you know, obviously not talking all the time. What did you feel? What'd you learn? Like, what did you think about your experiences and kind of where do you want to spend your time, based on that feedback? Cause I find in my own life, it was a lot of like, go do this, right? Go off and do that.
And get really good at it and only do that.
And then I come back and I'm like, what now? And they're like, well, go to the next thing. And it's very easy, at least in my own experience, you're like a ping pong ball. You're just kind of bouncing around. You can be very busy and maybe very productive, but you may not actually be moving towards the target you want. Yeah. So I think whether it's investing or technical work or marketing, you know, having some sort of systematic exposure and then winnowing down, right? So when someone comes time to make a decision or they're in the hot seat to say, all right, you're producing your own show. You're now on the show or you're making an investment decision. Yeah. Cause I know in my own experience, like, the first, you know, investment that I did kind of cradle to grave, I look back at it and I think, man, I made a lot of mistakes, right? Or man, it was just highly inefficient about how I went about it. And it's like anything else you look back in your life, you're like,
yeah,
man, I could have done that a lot faster. And so I think more exposure, systematic check-ins, and then trying to help people get to maybe a category or a sector that they really like.
I like that. I like that you said ping-ponging around because I feel like a lot of students nowadays feel like they have to pick one thing and stick with it and get really good at that one thing and not explore.
Absolutely.
It's sad. That's why I still really love general education credits. I'm like, I learned the most in my non-major classes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're speaking to one of my majors was history, right? So
nice.
You're
hitting history class.
You're hitting right. And happy to talk about favorite books after this. But like, I think a lot of the diverse experiences, you know, we were talking about, you know, experiences from boards or things like that. It's true in like any part of career. It's like, well, you know, if you've learned how to, you know, have to do your own, you know, podcast show from the beginning, you're going to bring a whole bunch of perspectives with you to your next thing that you never had before, right? Because it's a completely different medium from then you all saying, start a blog and write about it. A lot of similarities, but a lot of differences too.
Yeah, no, totally. I was a recruiter in another life and before this job, and I was always really impressed by the people who had multiple different jobs, like on their, like my other people at the company would probably not like that somebody did a bunch of different things, but I was like, look at all this knowledge they have in all these niche spaces. Like, I think that's cool. But
this is true. And that's true in the startup world. I mean, you know, it's almost a trope at this point, but when people say, you know, the Valley, you know, celebrates failure. One of the subsets are saying is we celebrate experiences.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and you're going to learn from things that are maybe painful or tough or things that forced you to do things, right? Where you may not have done them without some external stimuli, right? Of trying to get over a challenge or something. Yeah. And so just even the act of moving between different
career roles. I mean, this is common in our sector, right? Where you'll have people that were like, I was the classic engineer or salesperson. Now I'm the manager. Like what happens here? Right. And you see that kind of time and time again. So I couldn't agree more. And I think we didn't touch on this when evaluating companies, but that's one of the things that is, you know, every investor says it, but it's, you know, it's worth noting here as well as, you know, listening to the different founding team about kind of what they're doing, why they're doing it, and what their sort of inward compass is for all of this. Like I thought he hit it perfectly on the show of like why we're doing this. And you meet someone, that's a lot different than someone just saying, I saw this sector and I want to do something in it.
Yeah. Not how he did it at all. So,
you know, he has a whole story, which, you know, is clearly right. Been a guiding light for the company for the last, you know, two decades.
Yeah.
And I think we also benefit employees of the company with they put money back into their employees. Like we have funds that if we wanted to go take a course on like AI and ML, we could go do that and we could learn and we could pivot within the company, you know, just as you were saying.
Ping pong.
Yeah, exactly. And that's definitely like I've had an interesting trajectory at MetroStar, and I'm very grateful that I've had the trajectory that I've had. Because I've gotten some, you know, this is not where I thought I would have been when I started the company 4.5 years ago. But I'm so grateful that I've had those experiences and had the exposure and the people, you know, that, you know, you trust the people you work with. And then you all just like get better together.
You bet. I couldn't agree more.
So to kind of conclude, since I know we're coming up on time, what is one piece of advice you'd give someone who is coming to you to ask for investment money?
So for someone that's pitching, right, and they're looking for advice on maybe just to say like how the pitch could be better. I think, you know, we touched on this, but I'm kind of I can be maybe overly simplistic at times, but you know, the academic term would be like, what's your lit review in your paper, right? But like kind of understanding, even if it is literally just a slide or even not even a slide in your pitch, just a quick voiceover, is understanding where you are in the movie. And I think it is the very act of having to do that sort of work. It forces an individual to at least acknowledge some of the work that came before them and why they are where they are now, or why the thing they're talking about is relevant. And it forces them to do some level of exercise about where do we go? Right. And I think that is something that is a common variable across all the best presentations I've seen, whether it's a startup asking for money or whether it is like a research project idea, like a think tank. It is a sort of acknowledgement of the lineage of work and whether they're extending that work or they're challenging it, right, and moving into a new direction. I think that is a variable that's sometimes lost, right, in the excitement of something really compelling. Like when we're in sort of a new technical wave like we are now, it's easy to kind of get lost in the noise. And I think, for example, there's a lot of discussion, and I think it's a really cool time, but there's a lot of discussion on defense innovation, both from startups as well as new service providers in the industry. And a lot of the language or words they're using are correct. But I think one of the things that would benefit, or it has benefited a lot of these companies as they're out talking about it, is kind of understanding the ebbs and flows of the industry and to understand why things are the way they are now, right? Where, you know, I've certainly heard a lot of folks kind of bemoan, right, the state of consolidation. There's a lot of things to nitpick about it. I'm not disputing that, but understanding why we got to the point we're at also helps look at, well, why is the sales dynamic the way it is now? And how does that shape your business model going forward? Those are important things, I think, for any company in this particular sector. And so at a higher level, understanding that, I think, is key for any company. If they don't have it, I'd say do a week's worth of thinking and research plus, and come on back.
Yeah.
And come on back and then let's talk about it, because it's iterative, right?
Have you ever done that where you've like sent someone away and then they've come back and blown you away?
Yeah. Like, I mean, nice. If you think about
Simon on American Idol.
And I think like a lot of, you know, a lot, and this is true for a lot of investors, right? Like, you know, the old saying or a saying is, right, you know, like never close a door, right? Because, you know, every now and again, you'll just hear something completely crazy and you're like, that's crazy. And you're like, cool. But a lot of times you're like, it's maybe not right yet, or it's not at a stage yet, but think how much we were just talking about how much your career, right? Your careers have changed in your time here. And imagine that just like with a companies are just reflections of people, right? So they can change a lot too. Right. And so as a result, like you may come back and you think, man, like this is either completely changed, or I'm a big movie person and I like that Siskel and Ebert, right? You know, they used to go back, right, and like re-edit like some of their movie reviews. And some people used to get angry. They're like, you know, you can't do that. You're changing your answers on your test. But I think a lot of it in the review was like, yeah, we got this wrong. Like, this was an awesome movie. We just missed it.
Right? Yeah, respect and, that. Going back and being like, I was wrong.
Yeah. So like, you know, your views change, right, on a company just as much as the company changes.
Awesome. Thank you so much. If somebody wants to know more about the companies or things that you've co-founded, or just learn more about your journeys, where can they find you? Or do you have anything upcoming that you want to share? Other podcasts, not as good as ours, yeah, but no, other podcasts.
I think like for any of the companies, right, that we're involved with, you know, you just go to SRI Ventures on our homepage, click on any of the icons and it will send you off to those companies. You know, I'm biased, right? Cause I think all those are the best, but it's a great way to explore kind of what they're up to. And then, you know, for working with us, specifically, right, we have, you know, reach out direct on LinkedIn, or we have our inbound page on the site as well.
Thank you. You're really interesting guy.
No, I feel like awesome. We could keep going. I have so many more questions, but another time.
All right. Next episode, we'll get into favorite movies and discussions about movies of the 90s. All right.
So, yes. Oh, awesome. Yes.
Yes, done. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been awesome.
Thank you. This has been awesome.
Cool.